You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Wednesday, November 8th, and we're talking Yankees baseball today with our good friend Brian Hoke, Yankees reporter for MLB.com. Brian, we thank you for the time today, and as I said, we speak here on this Wednesday afternoon, and we're just about 24 hours removed from the tragic news of the passing of former two-time Cy Young winner Roy Halladay in a plane crash on Tuesday. This one really hurts, Brian. I mean, of course, any athlete death really hits home. But considering not just the player that Roy Halladay was, as like I said, the two Cy Youngs, one in each league, he had the perfect game, he had the postseason no-hitter, he's as accomplished as anybody in recent memory. But as the tributes come pouring in from other players that he played with and against, you get the sense that he was not only a great player, but just a great person, a great guy to be around, a wonderful husband, terrific father to two kids. And, this one really hurts. This one really stings. And from your perspective, given all the years he pitched with the Blue Jays and against the Yankees, countless times, any particular recollections or memories of Roy Halladay from you?
I mean, it's heartbreaking. You just hear the tributes coming in, as you mentioned, from his former teammates and people who played against him. And I thought they put it very well on MLB.com. They said he was your favorite player's favorite player.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks volumes about the kind of guy he was. I heard Brad Lidge talk about during his time with the Phillies, he would think that he was the first guy getting to the ballpark, and Roy would be there already, having worked out for 2 hours. And it really breaks your heart. You look at his Twitter feed. He obviously had a passion for flying. This was his big dream that he was going to do after he retired. He bought the plane. He posted videos. And I think it spoke volumes also. The press conference that the county sheriff did down there, I mean, he had a personal relationship with Roy Halladay. I think he coached Little League with his kids. So I think that just speaks to the outreach that he did down there in the Florida community throughout the American League. And then we could talk all day about what he did on the field. But having watched him in the American League East during a time of inflated offense, this guy was dominant. And then the thought that really comes to the forefront of my mind is the postseason no-hitter with Philadelphia, and he is going to be missed, and it's a real tragedy, a life taken way, way, way too soon. He had a lot more living to do.
No, absolutely. I mean, just 40 years of age and two young sons and a wonderful wife, and it just hurts on so many levels, and just a tragic story for not just baseball but all the sports is Roy Halladay passing away at the age of 40 following a plane crash, and it's just something that makes you shake your head and say, what, not just why him, but why anyone, but especially why him, because for all he accomplished on the field and for the type of player, for the type of human being that he was, just such a tragic loss. Well, Brian, from that, let's make a rather awkward transition into some news items for the Yankees. Of course, the big news item is the managerial search, and as we speak on this Wednesday, Rob Thompson, a bench coach under Joe Girardi, is going to be interviewed for the managerial vacancy. Talk about Thompson. I don't think even the most ardent Yankee fan knows a whole lot about him. He's obviously very experienced, a number of years serving on the coaching staff under Joe Girardi. What can you tell us about a guy that could be the next skipper in the Bronx?
Yeah, I think he's got a shot as one of their internal candidates. Obviously, Brian Cashman said he didn't want to waste anyone's time by giving out courtesy interviews, so I think that anybody you see go into Yankee Stadium and interview for this job has a legitimate crack at it. And Thompson, I mean, they shouldn't have to interview him too much. They should know him pretty well by now. He's an organizational lifer. He spent 28 years in the Yankee organization. As you mentioned, a lot in the major league dugout under Joe Girardi. He's filled in on a few occasions when Girardi's been sick or absent or ejected or what have you. So he's familiar around a lineup card. I mean, this is a guy, and you're right, Yankee fans probably don't know too much about Rob Thompson, but this is the guy that makes the gear spin. During spring training, Joe Girardi often has to go to, or often had to go, let me correct myself, to Rob Thompson and Larry Rothschild to find out what groups were hitting, who was on what field, where everybody was going to be that day. And it was Thompson's job to really keep that regimented up from 6 in the morning and when players start arriving until the last guy was off the field. That was his responsibility, and to make sure everybody got their work in. So I think there's going to be a lot of similarities between Thompson and Girardi. Brian Cashman, in his conference call, what he described sounded an awful lot like Joe Girardi. It just was obvious that for whatever reason, and he said communication with the players, a change was needed at this point in time. But I think Rob Thompson, it has a lot of similarities to Girardi. I think that it would be a comfortable fit. I'm not sure if Brian Cashman wants a comfortable fit right here. I think that he mentioned on the conference call he's not afraid of taking chances. And if he wanted a comfortable fit, you could have just plugged Girardi right back in there and gone to it. I mean, you were one win for the World Series.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, on one hand, you do maintain a continuity from the Girardi regime. On the other hand, if Girardi's not the guy you want, why would you want a guy similar to him? So there's, you know, arguments on both sides of the fence here. It's going to be interesting to see just what kind of a chance Rob Thompson does have as becoming the successor to Joe Girardi in the Bronx. Brian, on the player front, the big news that Masahiro Tanaka is not going to opt out of his contract and will fulfill the remaining 3 years and $67 million on his initial deal. I think this caught me a little bit by surprise, because when you consider how brilliant he was, it was either his last start or next to last start in the regular season, struck out 15 Blue Jays in the Bronx. Then he carried that into the postseason, three starts and a sub-1 ERA, 20 innings, 18 Ks. Considering all that and how hot he was, so to speak, are you surprised that he did not at least explore this option, considering that, again, because of the way he ended the season, he could have gauged a lot of interest from a lot of teams?
You might be right. I mean, it's a relatively weak free agent class. But, no, it did not surprise me, and here's why. He had such an up-and-down season, and he freely admitted that. There was a point during the year where the Yankees were probably hoping he would opt out, and so they could clear that money off their payroll. I didn't think he was going to do better than 3 years and $67 million on the open market, even given the free agent state of what's out there right now. I think that they were great, five great starts at the end of the year. That's probably the best I've seen him since 2014, before he had the lateral ligament tear. But let's not forget, he's still pitching with that. If he was to go out there on the open market, then you have to subject a team to those medicals. Do you really want to take that chance, take that gamble that a team's going to say, yeah, it hasn't snapped yet, we'll roll the dice and say it will, and we'll give you a raise too? I don't think that was going to happen. So I think that Tanaka, it was a good fit in New York. He's happy here. They're one win from the World Series. I mean, there are a lot worse situations you could be in.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's, you have to look at the entire body of work, like you said, not just the last five starts, but before that, so up and down. Gave up 35 home runs, one of the worst figures in all of baseball this year. So hopefully for Yankee fans, he continues that momentum garnered at the end of 2017 into 2018 and beyond. And, Brian, to wrap up here, no Yankees came away with gold gloves in 2017. Aaron Judge and Brett Gardner, certainly possibilities in the outfield for the Yankees. Of course, Gardner won in 2016. He finishes behind Alex Gordon. Meanwhile, Mookie Betts of the Red Sox wins for the second straight year, edging Aaron Judge. Surprised that neither one of them came away with gold gloves, or not really?
Not really. I didn't think Judge was going to beat out Mookie Betts. I mean, Judge, fantastic defensive player. I mean, Brett Gardner said it so many times. He's more than just a guy who hits the ball a long way. And he obviously helps the Yankees on both sides of the ball, but Mookie Betts was really something special for Boston. And in Kansas City, Alex Gordon, I was a little more surprised on that. But I go back to talking to Brett Gardner in spring training, and we were talking about his gold glove, and he said to me, yeah, the only reason I won it was because Alex Gordon was hurt for most of the year. And so that wasn't the case this year. So I think that was an indication that Gardner knew which way the voters probably were going to lean. So he probably wasn't too surprised when his phone didn't ring yesterday.
Yeah, and I love the refreshing honesty by Brett Gardner. That's so rare in a professional athlete. Some of these guys have egos, you know, bigger than the dugout. But Gardner, very down to earth, and he realizes that, you know what, I did win, but there's a big reason why. Gordon healthy in 2017, and Gardner has to settle for runner-up or somewhere beneath that. So that's, like I said, refreshing to see. And, Brian, recently Aaron Judge, who's up for a plethora of offseason awards, including an AL Rookie of the Year, he's pretty much a shoo-in for that, also in the running for AL MVP, competing against the Jose's, Altuve and Ramirez. But he recently talked about something kind of quirky and interesting in terms of his look and about his uniform and how he, again, has something of a different look from most other players in big league baseball. Here's what Judge had to say about that.
When I first got drafted, all we were allowed to wear was our pants up with our socks up high. You know, that's what I was used to. That's how I came through the minor leagues. And then it wasn't until 2016, I believe, or 2015, they allowed us to finally wear our pants down. And, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, I could never find pants that fit me. You know, I could never wear them down. You know, so I always had to pull them up just because I was so tall, the pants never went all the way down, so I had to wear my socks up high. So, you know, this past year, I think I was either talking with Bert or somebody or a couple guys. I said, I think I'm going to go pants up this year just to kind of take it back to my roots of, you know, playing as a little kid, little leaguer with my pants up, and, you know, playing in the minor leagues where it first started with my pants up.
So, Brian, some interesting comments there from Aaron Judge about the high socks and wearing the uniform the way he does. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's something that trails the Yankees players all the way back down to the low minors, as Aaron mentioned. And this is something that goes back to the George Steinbrenner years. You know, Steinbrenner wanted all of his players to look the same in the minor leagues, and they all have to wear the high socks. And you talk about the facial hair policies and all that. And so there's a specific Yankee uniform. And I remember Derek Jeter talking to me. It was his final week as a regular season player, and I think I was talking to him about the consistency of his bats, because he, as you know, Derek used only one model of bat in his career, and he said, come here, man, I'll show you something. And he pulls up his pants leg above his knee, and he had a stirrup. It almost looked kind of like a garter that keeps your socks high. And even though Derek didn't have to wear his socks high anymore, he got so accustomed to doing that in the minor leagues that he wore the same exact thing his entire major league career. So that's a whatever that little thing is that you call, I'm going to call it a garter. He took that all the way from the low minors, and he's taking it to Cooperstown. So there's just a little story about a connection between Judge and Jeter. And so if Aaron Judge wants to wear his socks high, he certainly has some select company and people who have done that in the past as well.
Yeah, and Yankee fans hoping that's not the only connection between a former Yankee great and a guy that could be a future Yankee great, talking about, again, Derek Jeter and Aaron Judge. And another topic, Brian, that Aaron Judge shared his thoughts about was about his first exposure to not just Yankee baseball, but Yankee playoff baseball. It's something different. It's something special. And he talked about the atmosphere at Yankee Stadium for his first ever home playoff game in the Bronx.
I've never been around an atmosphere like that before. The fans were in every single pitch. It felt like whenever a runner got on base, it felt like the bases were loaded and it's two outs, bottom nine. It just, the atmosphere that those fans brought to Yankee Stadium, it felt like the park was alive. It was alive, and I know we as players felt it. We fed off that. You know, a lot of players usually don't show emotion. We're showing emotion out there, and that's where you want to play. You know, there's no better place to play.
And, of course, you know, I'm sure that many other players share the same sentiment as Aaron Judge with that atmosphere for playoff baseball in the Bronx. And, you know, Brian, obviously it's something very special for Aaron Judge.
Yeah, and I think it's special for Yankee fans as well. I'm not sure I've ever felt Yankee Stadium feel the way it did during those postseason games against Cleveland and Houston. I mean, the building literally shook, and you heard people say, you know, the building is alive, and that's something you used to hear across the street at the old stadium when the fans were really on top of you, the way the structure was. It almost seemed like the upper deck was going to collapse onto the playing field. Sitting in the press box, I felt the stadium shake. You felt people banging and stomping, and Joe Girardi was talking about how that final game, that what turned out to be his final game, game five against Houston, he kind of took a look around and it reminded him of the old stadium, and you could see the liquids flying when something good happened, and people getting showered in beer or soda or whatever it is, and it just seemed like the magic of the 1990s was back. And it's guys like Aaron Judge who have done that to this building, because I'm sure it shook in 2009. I really can't remember, but it has been a while. And to hear Yankee Stadium and feel it the way it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the old Yankee Stadium during the glory days of the 90s and 2000s, that's a tough act to follow. But if 2017 is any indication, maybe, as you said, the Yankees are on the way to replicating that atmosphere for many years to come, given the young core and the young nucleus that this team currently possesses. So, Brian, great stuff there from you and from Aaron Judge. Thanks so much for the time on this Wednesday. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, New York Yankees.